Those of you who were here last night at the yacht site, Susa of Rav Cooper, would have heard Rabbi Cohn speaking about the selling of the chometz and how it's not really a fiddle, but it's genuine. It's not a legal fiction, but it's true. And that question of whether something is a loophole comes up on the Chiras Chometz. It comes up on Prusbul, which we once discussed. And the third thing it often comes up on is Heta Iska. The Torah forbids one to take interest or to pay interest on a loan, but it seems that you are able to get round this by the use of a document called Heta Iska, which creates some sort of partnership. Now, interest, just as a background, is abhorrent in the eyes of the Torah. In a number of places, the Torah stresses that you may not take interest, you may not pay interest. In the Parsha of Bahar, in the Chayimach, es kasvacha lo siteno b'neshech. And the Torah uses this word neshech a number of times, which really means to bite. Interest bites. I find the best way of explaining this is that when you have an overdraft or other loan and you get interest added on and you don't manage to pay it all back straight away, then you get interest charged to you on the interest. That really bites. And you got this idea of biting not only in Sedra of Bahar but also in Kiseitse. Lo sashich lo alecho neshech neshech ochel neshech kol davar asher yishach achicha lo sashich. Look at the repetition of that word in a noun form or in a verbal form in Kiseitse, or you've got in Pashas Mishpotim in Kesef Taves Amis or Niyimoch lo sasimun olov neshech voyoki yitzak elai, because the poor person will then be crying to me. And as it proceeds in the words in Bahar, Vochayimoch, allow your brother to live. The poor person needs a loan, and it's a mitzvah daraisa in Kesef Taves Amis to give a loan to a poor person. Oh, you might say, well, I can just give the poor person. Yes, that's fine, but it might enhance his pride and his ego if you simply lend to him. And the Chometz Chaim says in Avas Chesed that a portion of one's tzedakah which one gives should be giving a loan to poor people. Hence the idea of lending. Now we say this Shir Le'ilo Nishmas Reb Doniel Ben Achover Eliezer Wolf, the father of Yossi Ruf, who issued L'chaim Aruchim. And it's very nice that people come here all the way from Switzerland to join us for the bagel breakfast cheer. What we're doing today is asking ourselves, is Heta Iska cheating? Well, obviously you're going to say to me, if the answer to that is yes, then we wouldn't be here, we wouldn't be from Yidden. Yeah, okay. We want to explain and understand why is it that we are engaging in such a dialogue and practice. Now the Rambam writes in Hilchas Malveh Alove Perek Beis Halacha Beis that you might be incurring six prohibitions min HaTorah, six Isurim, if you give or take interest. And you might say to me, listen, what's the big deal? If both the borrower and the lender agree with each other, the borrower is quite happy to pay interest to get his loan. And the lender, of course, won't lend his money unless he gets something in return. So it's a deal where both sides may be benefiting, and nevertheless, the Torah will say, no, it is not allowed. So you might argue, well, what's the big deal? Is it such a terrible thing? Says the Rishalmi in Bava Metzia, Kol Amalve Beribis Ke'ilu Kofer Be'Elokei Yisrael. Somebody who lends with ribis is as if he is denying Hashem, he is denying Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Nisim, he is a kofer. So much so that Chaylo Yichya Zeh Amalve Beribis in Shmos Rabbah Lamed Aleph, it says, somebody who lends with ribis will not merit Tachias Hamesim. It doesn't say this, as far as I'm aware, with any other Aveiro. There's a famous story which Gershon reminded me about, Rabbi Akiva Eger was once involved in, where a very wealthy man in the community was lending money on interest. And it came to the time of his burial, and the Chevra Kadisha wanted an exorbitant sum of money for the burial fees. I think it was 200 rubles, which was incredibly expensive. So the family felt that this was extortionate, it wasn't fair, and they went to Rabbi Akiva Eger, and they say, it's not right, just because our father was regarded as a wealthy man, that he should have to pay so much for his burial fees. So So Rabbi Akiva said to them, he said, you know, quite honestly, you're getting a bargain. Because everybody else, they pay less. It's because they're going to merit Techiyas HaMesim. They will merit the resurrection. So the amount that they've paid for their burial plot is really just a short-term rental. Because eventually, and not very long to go, they will merit Techiyas HaMesim. But your father, since he lent money with interest openly against all the rules, his burial place is permanent. He will not merit Techiyas HaMesim. Therefore, what you're getting really is really a bargain. And they have to pay up. But you might say to me, as many might ask, is this really right? To make a heta iska, if the Torah makes so many asurim, you know, you rabbis, they try to say, you always find a way out of something if you really want to. How could Chazal go against all these asurim daraisa? How could they create what might be a kind of loophole or device, as people would allege, that this is being done? Is it good enough when I walk into Bank Leumi and there's some little notice on the wall which is called a Heta Iska Kalali, and I go and deposit money with them and they pay me interest, whether it's Bank Leumi or Bank Mizrahi? Recently the DAS published a list of some financial corporations or banks in this country which have Jewish ownership or part Jewish ownership. Is that in any way different from the Reform, who say, oh well, we make compromises and this is not so convenient, so we're going to find a way round it? Is that what we're doing? So is it just a compromise? I once knew a man who said, I don't make compromises with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was a Bechor and he would fast on Erev Pesach. He said, I'm not going to have this Siyam. It's a compromise. He didn't believe in doing things like Prusbul, Heta Iska. He didn't rely on his local Eruv. He said, I don't make compromises with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He did make a compromise with me. He allowed me to marry his daughter. But was he right or was he not right? Was he extra righteous as a result of this? Or on the other hand, you could say, well, this is Divrei Chazal for many generations. It's a mitzvah to listen to what Chazal say. Chazal say you can make an Eruv. Chazal say you can make a Siyam on Erev Pesach for the Bechor. Are we ignoring Divrei Chazal? This could be something serious. Not to cause aspersions, chas v'shalom, on my father-in-law, who was a very righteous man. But any solicitor and accountant who is present will know that in their lifestyle there are certain loopholes which might be made to circumvent the law, to get round things. And the Torah, in a way, has to balance its laws, because remember, we, by the same token of we want to help the poor person, we might be helping the poor person by giving him a loan where he has to pay something for it. Or, you know, look at a modern economy nowadays. A modern economy can't function without a rate of interest. In fact, those of you who have studied economics will know that it's the rate of interest which is determined as a result of so many factors in the way the country is run. The inflation rate, the foreign currency exchange rate, the unemployment rate, and all this influences when the Bank of England fix an interest rate. So how is it possible for us to reconcile the fact that interest is forbidden in our Torah between Jews and Jews, and nevertheless a modern economy is not really able to function? The banking system will collapse if there is no rate of interest. So how do we reconcile this? So there is what Chazal tell us, a heter iska. Now, although the actual format of this document was only drawn up relatively recently, in the 5th century, by the Maharam Rav Mendel ben Avigdor, he was the Abbeis Din of Krakow, nevertheless, the concept which it's based on really comes back to the Mishnah and to the Gemara. Already in the Mishnah, in Bava Metzia, on Daf Samaches, it talks about making a joint business venture. I won't get tied down with what the Mishnah says, but it's brought forward into the Gemara there, and the Gemara in Daf Kuf Dalad, Kuf Vav, in Bava Metzia, Perekei Zeh Neshech, talks about a partnership arrangement. And that if two people are partners, shutfus, then we will not call it interest. We will call it the profits which are accrued as a result of a business venture. And isn't that semantics? Well, that's the object of our Shia. Are we cheating? Now, as I said, if the answer is that we are cheating, then we can all go home and forget what Yiddish Kite's about. But so the answer is no, we're not cheating, but my job today is to try to explain to you, in our limited time, how we are not cheating. So one provides the capital, and one is running the business. So the, what we would call the borrower, even though he's not borrowing on a loan, and even though someone is not lending on a loan, one fellow puts down the capital, we call him the investor, and the other person is called the managing partner. The one, he is taking the money and he's investing it in the business. So they are sharing the profits and the losses. I know exactly what you're going to ask in a moment. Bank Leumi will not accept it if your business suffers and you make losses and you say, well, I can't pay back. You'll have to pay back, but we'll come to that.
Read the documents.
We'll come to that. So that is the essence of a heter iska, that there is a business partnership going on between two individuals. And the best way of doing the heter iska, according to many poskim, is where half the money put down is in the form of a loan, an interest-free loan, which is repayable even if there's a loss, but the other half is a deposit. I can deposit money with you, and that way, I'm not giving you a present, I'm just asking you to look after it. You're a shomechino. You're looking after my money for me, and you can do business with it. There are some poskim who even say that when you put money in a deposit account in a bank, you're just depositing it with the bank. You're not really lending it to the bank. And then the bank do business with it, and people generally will put money in the bank for safekeeping. They might not even worry about the interest they get on it, particularly nowadays when the interest rate is so low. But that's an opinion which is a minor opinion. The general idea of heter iska is that half the money which is being given is for the loan and half is a deposit. It's possible for all the money to be called a deposit, but there are advantages and disadvantages when that happens. Advantages if there's a high interest rate, disadvantages if there is a loss and how one deals with it. We'll come to that. So I go into Bank Leumi or Bank Mizrahi Bank and I take out a loan for £100,000 at 7% and I repay that so-called loan with the interest, with the profits that I accrue from my business, and then it's not called interest. So there are four basic components of a heter iska, and by discussing those four basic components, we will then understand why it is not called ha'aromo, or loophole device, as we might call it in English terminology. The first part of the heter iska is that the payment being made is an investment and not interest, that it's not ribis. We are redefining the transaction, that the recipient is an active manager of those invested funds, and those returns are profits. Ah, you'll say to me, yeah, but what if the business flops? What if I end up going bust? I still have to pay the money back to the bank. How do I get round this? The bank, surely you will say, have to share the loss. That brings us to stage two of the heter iska. And that is what we might call the protection of the principal of the money. And the Truma Sadeshan writes on this in Siman Shin Beis. He says he allows it that you make it difficult to claim a loss. The bank have a problem in that they might suffer a loss, but the borrower, or shall we say the managing partner, will not be able to get away with it by saying to the bank, I made a loss, therefore I don't have to pay you back. How is this done? If a loss is made, then according to the heter iska, that person who made the loss is told you're not going to be believed if you say you made a loss, unless you show full audited accounts, you bring two witnesses, kosher witnesses, to certify that you made a loss, and that you make a shavua. You swear an oath on a sefer Torah that you didn't make a loss. And nobody wants to do that.
That
he made a loss. And nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to make a shavua. Nobody wants this hassle and the embarrassment of bringing witnesses and suffering all the discomfort. So as a result of that, a person will say, look, I'd rather give the money to the bank, even though I made a loss, rather than make a shavua on a sefer Torah. Nobody will do that.
But is he paying
that
interest?
So he's giving money to the bank, not just to repay the loan, but also the assumed profits. Well, wait a minute, we're coming to the next business. If there were profits, or even if there were losses, as a result of that, he's giving compensation for the investment in lieu of taking a shavua. what he would have done.
He made a lot. He should really be taking a shvuah, redeeming his full account.
He should really be taking a shvuah, but he doesn't want to take a shvuah.
God couldn't be bothered, so what he's paying is what he's paying is interest now.
We don't call it interest. We're saying that is compensation in lieu. So let's come to the next stage, because you could ask the question also another way. What if he makes excessive profits? What if he makes more than the 7%? Isn't the bank entitled then to extra money, since they are partners in the business? So that brings us to stage 3.
But how can you use a percentage rate to it anyway? Because a percentage rate indicates that it's a fixed, it's like getting a fixed return.
This brings us to stage 3.
And therefore, that whatever you call that fixed return, that is interest in modern terms. Whatever you like to call it, share profits are not 7%. If you're using the term, and everything is geared towards...
I knew I was going to get a beating.
And another thing is, you could also argue, if you're lending somebody some money, they're getting economic use out of this.
Yes.
Like with anything else, you lend somebody... You lend somebody, I don't know, some other gift.
A car, no?
A car. They're getting benefits out of it.
Right, we're coming to a car later.
What I'm trying to say is that the money you get in return is for being allowed to use that gift. You can call it interest, you can call it what you like.
If you're hiring a car,
you
say you're hiring them.
Right. We'll talk about personal purchases in a moment, because it's not the same thing, because you might say you're not investing any money. At the moment, we're talking about somebody who's running a business and he's investing and he needs capital in order to buy his factory or whatever it is, and as a return of the profits, the bank will benefit as well. What we might have a problem with is personal loans. If I've got to buy a car or I have to just pay a tax bill, you know, I'm not investing that money, or am I? So we'll come to that. Let's first look at the major components of the heter iska. Number one, investment, not interest. Number two, the protection of the principal, truma sadeshen, allowing it difficult for the bank to claim if there was a loss. The third component is that if there had been excessive profits or if there had been losses, and that is to determine in advance the expected earnings. Based on the Truma Sadeshen, the Kutras Hasma writes that the parties are allowed to predefine what their expected earnings are on the investment. And the bank can therefore forego the extra profits, just like the bank is not suffering from the losses. So that we will predefine what those expected earnings are, and that will be sufficient for the bank in order to get a return on the investment. However, as the manager of the joint investment, there is a fourth issue now. If the bank lends me money, or if anybody lends me money, and I'm doing business with that money, I'm doing a favor for the bank. If I'm doing a favor for the bank, and they've given me what you might say is an interest-free loan, by me doing them that favor of investing the money, I'm doing something favor for them, and that's a kind of interest. And that's not allowed. I'm not allowed to do a favor, just like I'm not allowed to sweep your garden path if you lend me money, because that is a kind of payment of interest. So what do we do to get around this problem? As the manager of a joint investment, I'm working for my partner. So what do we do? He must pay me for my services. So that comes to stage 4 of the heter iska, which is that a salary is agreed for services rendered by the managing partner to the investor. And it can be just a token amount. It can be £1. But it has to be recognized and understood by the parties that the person who is doing something for the lender or for the investor is being paid for those services. So the bank is compensating me by a token sum, you might say £1, or the heter iska can stipulate that I'm entitled as the managing partner to an extra share, that rather than profits being shared 50-50, I might be making, say, 66% instead of 50% in lieu of a salary because I'm providing that service. Those are the 4 components of the heter iska. Now, you might say to me, okay, that's okay regarding banks, because the banks are giving you something to invest and to do some business with. But what if you give me a personal loan, I'm suddenly faced with a huge bill and I don't know how to pay it. Let's say I get a large tax bill. And if I get a large tax bill, that money you give me to pay the tax man, I'm not investing it. I'm not doing business with it. The whole essence of heter iska is that you're doing business with the money. And that creates the partnership. You can't call it a partnership if you're not doing business with the money. So there are occasions when a heter iska can't be used. For example, let's say you had a court case against another Jew, even though you shouldn't go to court, to a secular court, but let's say you had a heter to go to secular court, and the court rules that the guy has to give you X amount of pounds, then under the rules of the courts nowadays in this country, you can charge interest on that payment if payment is late. Now, there is no way a heter iska can overcome that. You are not allowed to charge interest to another Jew when there is a court decision to pay you a sum of money. There's no way at all.
But if he wouldn't pay you, if the money is not paying you worth, he's using it to run his business. So he is using it.
Right, well, we're coming now to personal loans. A personal loan can create a problem. If I've got no profit-making investments, we've dealt with banks. Let's say I want to buy a car. Let's say I want to make a wedding for my daughter. I need money. That's not investing it. I'm not doing business with it. I'm paying the caterer and I'm paying the musician and I'm paying for the wedding car. That's not an investment. Well, you might say it is. You know, children are your investments. Grandchildren are your profits. But come on, it's not running a business in the normal sense of the word. So what do we do there? So there, the Shoilo Meshiv, Rav Shaul Nachazon, writes something quite ingenious. He says, if the borrower has got other profit-making investments, then we can consider that the lender has a partnership in those assets in lieu of the money received for the car or for the wedding. Now, buying a house, you could say, is a personal investment, but that is an easier thing to deal with because the house is always an investment. In fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein devises a special heter iska for buying a house where half the money is capital and half the money you're paying back as rent until you've paid off the capital and you're paying a rent, and that gives money to the lender. So that is a special kind of heter iska he devises for buying a house. And a car, you could say, is an investment for your work because your car is income producing as a result of using it for your work. But what if there are no investments whatsoever? Let's say a person has no house, has no car, has no businesses, and a person is a poor person. So the Shoil HaMeshiv says, it's okay. Imagine he's discussing a teacher who has no investments. He just gets his basic, simple, poor salary for teaching in a cheder, and he has to marry off his daughter. So he says, if that teacher needs money, if we wouldn't lend him or give him that money, he would have to leave his job and procure some other way of raising money, like he'd go knocking on doors. So although he's not making any profits from the loan, it's what the economists would call an opportunity cost. That the indirect effect on not being able to get that money is he won't be able to continue his job. And as he won't be able to continue his job, that is regarded as a business in which the lender becomes a partner. It's an amazing chiddush of the Shoil HaMeshiv, and the Maharsham goes along with that as well and supports the view of the Shoil HaMeshiv. There are, however, some poskim who don't go along with this, and they say it's not good enough. And according to those other poskim, you can't use a heter iska. But the Shoil HaMeshiv and the Maharsham and many poskim nowadays follow this, that it's possible to make a heter iska even for such a personal kind of money being forwarded. But as we said, there are certain instances when a heter iska cannot be used. So all shailas should be forwarded to reliable rabbinical authority. But we will find that Chazal, and Rav Reish writes about this in his Chelkas Yaakov, Chelek Gimel, Simon Kuf Tzadi Gimel, he discusses the very subject of Ha'aromo and whether it applies to Heter Iska. And he explains how Chazal went out of their way to try and help Parnosa. And it does remind me of Rav Kupa Zatzal, whose Yotzeit was yesterday, and there was a very interesting gathering and very fine speeches describing Rabbi Kupa. And one of the amazing attributes that Rabbi Kupa had was he always went out of his way to try and make sure that people's parnosa were not affected, and to find a halachic view which would enable person to be able to continue properly in their parnosa. I even have a friend who once was told that he should be attending a cremation ceremony for a partner of his firm, and he felt extremely uncomfortable about it, and if he would go it might look like the Jews agree to cremations. And he went and asked Rabbi Cooper what he should do, and Rabbi Cooper told him to go along, sit in the back row, be a bit incognito, but he has to be there because that will protect his livelihood for his parnosa, and it will not in any way be endorsing the fact that he agrees to a cremation taking place for a Jewish person who was a partner of his firm. It was a Jewish person. So I heard from my son Danny that Rav Pinchas Scheinberg Zatzal said that when it comes to banks, we really don't have any worry at all. And this is a view of a number of poskim, that nowadays directors are employed by the company and they are not really the company themselves. The shareholders are not really the owners of the company. A company is really a non-entity. And how can you understand this? If a company goes bust, the company goes bankrupt, then it doesn't have to pay you any money for what it owes you.
But it's a legal entity.
It's a legal entity, but it's not.
This is a non-entity.
A company, according to many poskim, is not a human entity. So if it goes bust, there's no payments to make. So according to Rav Scheinberg, and there are a number of others who said this, Rav Dayan Weiss, though, disagrees in Minchas Yitzchok. He says, if a company is a non-entity, you don't need a heter iska. Nevertheless, we have heter iska klali, but there are a number who don't like the idea of heter iska klali. Right. But for example, according to Rav Scheinberg, if you buy some kalim from a company, you might not even have to total them in a mikveh, because you're not really buying them from a non-Jewish entity. You're buying them from something which is not anything other than abstract. That is his view. Sorry, what did you say?
No, it's very common today for directors of the company to give personal guarantees on
loans. To give personal guarantees when they direct
on loans.
On loans. All right, well, if there are personal guarantees, then it seems you'll need a heter iska. Now, there is another issue which comes up with interest, and that is various utility companies, like your phone bills, your electricity, gas. In Israel, it's quite common that the first bill you get already has an interest payment placed on it, assuming that you'll be paying later than the date by when you are supposed to pay. How does one deal with that? I know that BT on their bills seem to add all sorts of charges in addition to what your phone charges are, apart from the rental. They say for processing the payment. Well, or if you make a late payment charge, you have a late payment charge if you pay beyond a certain date. Well, BT is not a Jewish company anyway, but if such a company who is Jewish does this, it's not fair. You never agreed to it, did you? And I heard B'Shem Rav Dov Gershon Meltzer, who is on the Adayan on the Badatz, based in, he's a Magid Shir in Mir. He says, that's not really interest, it's theft. Because you never agreed to it. And besides, when you pay it, you're not paying it because it's an interest charge, you're paying it because you want your phone reinstalled. You're paying it because you want your electricity and gas. So on that basis, he says, that's not interest. Coming back to Rav Breisch, Rav Breisch from Switzerland, best place, Yossi, isn't it? Rav Breisch from Zurich wrote that you might think from the Bechor Shor that there is a haromo, that there is a device there. The Bechor Shor talks about somebody who sells his animals on Erev Pesach, and the guy is feeding them with chometz in order to fatten them up, and you buy those animals back straight after Pesach, which is, yeah, certainly going against the spirit of the law, isn't it? And the Rabbi Chashar forbids this. He says this is a real haroma, but he says this is not the same thing. He says the Gaonim in each generation tried to ensure that businesses can flourish, and he says mitzvah lishmoa ledivrei chachomim. This is not reform. These are rabbis working within specific parameters to make sure that the halacha is complied with. Reform don't believe in Termin HaShemayim, so there's no way you can suggest that there is any comparison. There is another aspect, and what you are thinking in your mind is not really the same thing as what goes on a contract. Devarim shebelibo ainu devarim. We go in halacha by the written contract. It's the same with mechiras chometz. When you sell your chometz, you might have a whole warehouse of whiskey. And you think like, well, yeah, the caretaker of the shul is not really intending to buy a whole warehouse of whiskey for Pesach. But it goes by what's written on the contract. We want to discuss mechiras chometz in detail. And since we go by that, it's not comparable to like selling animals before Pesach. If two Jewish people want to keep the din and they perform an agreement which the Torah allows, that is not called ha'aromo. We go by the terms of that agreement. And for hundreds of years, we've had Gaonim agreeing to this procedure. We're working within their parameters. However, there are certain views who do depart from this. The idea of having a heter iska klali in a bank is abhorrent in the eyes of one person, Rav Shmuel Eliyahu, who is the chief rabbi of Tzfas, and he made an announcement 4 years ago that we should follow the way of the Islamic banks. What do the Islamic banks do? Because the Muslims don't allow interest. He feels that their method is even better. In following Sharia law, they do not charge interest at all. They don't have a heter iska klali, but they talk about agency fees, because they are using money to lend, deposited with them to lend to others, and they are acting as a go-between between borrowers and depositors. And he says, for you to argue that the banking system would collapse if we wouldn't have rates of interest, he says, it's not true. If you look at the Islamic banks, at this very moment in time, they're managing $300 billion of assets, and they're managing to function. All right, that's his view. They have something called musharaka, called leases, agency fees, or wakala, I don't know what all these things mean. And Rav Eliyahu says, is it right that the bank managers are earning $2 million whilst they are evicting families from their homes for not paying their mortgages? He says, cancel heteruska. It's not right. He says it goes against the spirit of what the Torah is expecting from us in helping poor people who might be homeless. So that's his view. But in general terms, what the halacha tries to do is to strike a balance. You've got to run an economy, and there are legitimate ways of doing so in having partnerships. But we know of the Torah's desire to help the poor. And the whole emphasis of the Torah, giving all these pesukim about neshech, about biting, is to bring home to roost the idea that poor people need help. And l'chachila, as the Chofetz Chaim says, you should try and help a poor person by lending sums of money. But there are rich people who will say, yeah, okay, but when I'm lending a large sum of money, I'm really losing out because I could be using that money elsewhere to do business with it. So we will be encouraging the rich people to lend money to poor people by making this partnership agreement, by making heter iska. And the result, we're helping the poor people. And we discussed this once with Prosper when it comes to Shmittah. Hillel instituted a Prosper. Why did Hillel institute a Prosper? Because he was worried that rich people would stop lending the poor people. Because after the Shmittah year, they could no longer claim their money back. So as a result of that, the rich people will stop lending the poor people. So in order that the rich people will carry on lending, he instituted the prosbul, which was to put it in the hands of the Beis Din, and the Beis Din, under their powers of Hefka, Beis Din Hefka, can always claim back a loan, even though the individual can't. And that's what the prosbul does.
So how is that different to your...
the rich man could have engaged in heter iska, but the rich man did not have the emuna and faith in the chachomim to do so. The case of Rabbi Akiva Eiger was he was malveh beribis, full stop. He charged an interest rate and that was it. But it's true, you're right. Had the rich man engaged in heter iskas and just sat down with people, and that both parties understood what a heter iska is and what sort of partnership they're doing, there would have been nothing to stop that rich man in doing what he did and receiving money as profits of investments. Yes.
So
that is true. But he was Malvid the rivers. He didn't care. But there's an amazing chiddush brought by the Sefer Nitzei Gavriel. He brings down, it's in his Sefer on Shmittas Ksofim, and he brings down from the Ritzvaz, who was Rabbi Yaakov David from Tzfat, in his Perush on a Sefer Pa'asa Shulchan on Shavir's, he says an amazing chiddush. He talks about the subject of Aharomo and legal fictions and devices, and the people who are cynical and say, yeah, you rabbis, you know a way around. And he talks about selling chometz, and he talks about Prusbel, and he talks about Heta Iska. And he gives an amazing chiddush. He says, in truth, all these three devices are not heterim. He said they are chumras. Hmm. They are stringencies. Why? Because with selling of chometz, in any case you can do bitul ba'al masagi, you say you're kol chamira, I disown my chometz. So you don't really need to sell your chometz because you said kol chamira. So it's a chumra to make sure you're doing a belt and braces job, to make sure you don't own any chometz for Pesach. Wait a minute. The next thing, with Shmita, he says you don't really need a prosbul. Why you don't need a prosbul? Because there has already been a power to vest your interests into the Beis Din, and the Beis Din could reclaim your loans under Hefka Beis Din Hefka in doing something in the sense of fairness. You don't really need a prosbul. But why do you have a prosbul? To go lachumra, to make sure and show that you're keeping to the din of Shmita. And thirdly, with Heta Iska. He says you don't really need a heter iska when you have a partnership. When you've got an agreement between two individuals or with banks, and you've got this agreement that there is a partnership arrangement, that there's accruing of profits inbuilt into that, you discuss how you deal with the losses or how you deal with excess profits, but you have a partnership agreement, you don't really need that document of heter iska, which is a relatively recent phenomenon. But you go to Chumra to show to yourself and to the world that what you're doing is really a partnership and not alone. But I feel there's one further idea which comes out from all this in the way Chazal looked at it. And that is the idea of confidence. Confidence that the rich people will know they get their money back. Hillel instituted the principle, even though he didn't have to, because he wanted to instill confidence in the rich people that they'll get their money. So they got a piece of paper in their hand. It makes them feel good. And then they'll lend the money. Confidence is something which can be really quite artificial. If you announce a Maariv tonight for 10 p.m. Yeah? If people think there won't be a minyan, there won't be a minyan. If people think there will be a minyan, there will be a minyan. It's a bit like the stock market. If people think that shares will go up in Glaxo, then they will go and buy shares in Glaxo, Smith Klein, and the shares will go up. If people believe on the stock market the shares will go down, the shares will go down. Because the whole market is dependent on confidence. The foreign exchange rate, dare I say this word, Brexit. The whole concept of the economy, inflation, unemployment, is built a lot on confidence. And that is the root of having a stable economy. I don't want to use any terminologies which the politicians are using at the moment. But this is what Chazal had in mind when they were devising not only Mechiras Chomet, but also the idea of Prusbel and Heta Iska. By having this form of documentation, which the rich people have in their pockets, when they lend some money, when it's before Shmita, or when they lend money and they're not going to get interest, but they're having a partnership, it gives them confidence. That confidence helps the poor people. In Kesef Talvei Sami, our bottom line is to help the poor. And that is the beauty of the way Chazal deal with it. If you want to know more details about the common pitfalls of ribbits, we once gave a long time ago a bagel breakfast share. It was the 7th one we did, in our 17th one we did. There you can hear online about ribbits. But today our emphasis was just on Heter Iska. That confidence which is built into people's lives create a better life for everybody, for the rich people and for the poor people. Thank you very much. אבי חנן בן עקש רואה מעצו הקדש ברוך הוא יזח סביב לא ידעמי לשם מצו שני מה אז אני לא יחפה את סתמר סיסקו יגדיל תרבי עדיר